One of the oldest games in the world has experienced this real cultural moment. Credit in part goes to the Netflix series The Queen's Gambit, featuring a fictional chess prodigy gal that debuted in October.
Tell the readers of life how it feels to be a girl among all those men.
I don't mind it. Chess isn't always competitive. Chess can also be beautiful.
Oh, people are inspired to play chess in the pandemic. Who taught you how to play? What are your tips for chess beginners or anyone who wants to get better at the game? Conversation right here, 800-642-1234. Alex Bettinelli is a chess instructor at the Wisconsin Chess Academy, which he founded. He's a three-time Wisconsin State champion and a national chess master. Alex, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hello. It's great to be here.
Well, chess has this reputation for being a very difficult intellectual game and has some of that baggage. What would you say to someone to convince them that the game is for anyone? Anyone can enjoy it.
Well, it's definitely a game for any age. And I actually just had a student the other day who spent his Thanksgiving organizing a family chess tournament. So what happened was a third grader came up with a list of uncles, aunts, parents, and grandparents, and he put together a tournament online and won it ahead of adults, ahead of everyone. So it can definitely be fun, and it's fun at any age.
How do you think the computer technology has impacted chess the way it is today?
Well, in a very real sense, it made it a lot easier and more accessible. It used to be more difficult to improve. You needed to read a lot of chess books and, you know, study for many hours, get access to the right materials. Right now, it's all very simple. It's at the tip of your fingers.
I wonder who inspired you to play chess? Who taught you?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I started when I was 6 years old or so, and my older brother played. He was already at the chess club. And my father took me to the same club, and I kind of clicked with the game right away.
Where was this?
It was kind of natural. Sorry, what did you say?
Yeah, where was this?
This was back in Moscow. Yeah. I was born in the USSR and went to chess school there until I was about 15 years old. And
chess school? You went to chess school?
Yeah, I did.
What was that like?
Well, it's like an after-school program where you go and meet with their other kids and their coaches. So there is like a little group lesson, then there is a tournament, and kind of like the way we do, you know, soccer or music here in the United States. Chess was one of the mainstream extracurriculars in the former USSR.
What is a personal accomplishment you were very proud of in chess?
That's an interesting question. Probably, I would say probably having some students who could beat me. I mean, I was able to teach somebody to be better than I am right now. So that was a pretty cool thing.
That's a very good mark of a teacher, I would imagine.
I kind of pride myself on that, yeah.
If you can be awfully humble. I mean, that's the thing about chess is when my six-year-old beats me, you know, I'm very humbled by that. And he does it so elegantly and with such nice manners, but I kind of have to just swallow my pride.
Well, yeah, there is a nice smile from a six-year-old as they checkmate you, yeah.
So what are some of the most common mistakes you see beginning chess players make?
Good question. Probably the biggest one I see, and it's adults or kids, it's kind of a universal mistake. They bring their queen out way too early in the game. So I always teach my students, you know, bring your knights and bishops out and get your king to safety first before you move the queen.
What do you think of the middle game, if you will, if you can explain that time in the middle of the game?
Yeah, sure. So at the beginning, we try to control the center of the board, bring knights and bishops, get your king to safety. And right after that, middle game begins. And depending on the kind of opening that was played, there is a different strategy. You need to think a couple moves ahead. You know, what happens if they move there? What is their threat? So it's definitely the most complicated part of the game.
We're talking with Alex Bettinelli, who is a chess instructor, national chess master, helping us out on the classic game, getting to know him. How do you play chess during the pandemic? What's your favorite way to play online? Do you prefer to play computers or real people? Join in at 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up ahead with Alex back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. You know that demoralizing feeling when your six-year-old beats you effortlessly at a game of chess? Mom, what are you thinking with that move? Let's let that image dissolve and appreciate the game for what it is and that it's enjoyed straight across the ages. Who taught you how to play chess? Are you active in online chess communities? Have you picked up playing chess in the pandemic? Conversation right here, 800-642-1234. We have three-time Wisconsin State chess champion Alex Bettinelli as our guide. So, Alex, I want to look at ways to try to gain dominance over the board. Is it helpful for beginners to study classic chess openings or to study moves?
Great question. I think for general kind of improvement and appreciation of the game, the answer is yes. But even more helpful is playing the game yourself and going over your games with a stronger chess player, and also doing puzzles on your own. Solving puzzles is one of the best ways to get better.
How many moves do you see ahead when you're playing?
Thanks for asking. This is a very good question. And it's a common misconception that chess players have to see 10, 15 moves ahead. But realistically, we only try to see 2 to 3 moves ahead, but pretty wide. So in many different directions. It's very rare that I have to, you know, calculate to see ahead 10 moves ahead. 2 to 3 is more normal.
2 to 3 moves ahead is more normal. And you also, I would imagine, have to kind of be open to change, open to something unexpected happen that you don't anticipate, you didn't anticipate.
Very well said. Yes, that's exactly how chess is.
So what do you do nowadays to improve your chess game? How do you train?
I am actually taking lessons from a grandmaster who is part of the Wisconsin Chess Academy. His name is Josh Friedel. So I go over my games, and he points out common mistakes that I make, and I try to fix those. And also, just like everybody else in the chess world, I solve lots of chess puzzles.
What are those chess puzzles like? How do you do those?
So there are lots of chess books with puzzles, and the best moves are described at the end and as solutions. But also it is possible to do it online. There are many websites where you just go and train yourself that are called tactic servers. And you can even target it. Like if you have a problem with specific type of pattern or different kind of tactic, then you can solve, you know, 10, 20, 100 puzzles in that specific area.
Yeah, you can really do some drills there, I would imagine, just kind of drilling
it. Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What do you think of chess.com?
It's a good planned website. I mean, there are several of them. chess.com is probably the most popular.
Yeah.
The one that I usually use for myself and to give lessons is Lichess. It's lichess.org.
Okay.
That's probably the second most popular website.
So, you know, here's that old nature versus nurture question. Do you think top chess players are born with a natural ability and a gift, or do they become talented through that drilling, that hard work, that study, that right environment?
It's mostly the second one. It's, you know, just about anybody can become a pretty darn good chess player. And then if you choose to become, you know, a grandmaster, which is the highest title, then it's a lot of hours of work and dedication.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things that makes chess so complicated is that there are just so many pieces and it's easy to accidentally let your guard down. You know, are there any last tips you can tell us to keep track of it all?
Another great question. That's actually the cornerstone of all our lessons is we always tell students, before you make your move, make sure you ask yourself what the threat is. And that simply means looking at every one of the opponent's pieces and see where they're pointing and if there is something dangerous happening. And right before you make your move, again, look if you're giving something away for free. So, I mean, to quickly summarize it, it just means that, you know, if you can take away the free stuff that your opponent throws at you and not give away your own free pieces, you're a good chess player.
Mm. Alex Bettinelli founded the Wisconsin Chess Academy, National Chess Master. Did you play chess as a kid, then stopped? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll stick with this conversation ahead. Wisconsin Weekend continues after a news update on the Ideas Network. The Netflix drama series The Queen's Gambit, about a chess prodigy gal, has only helped further chess's cultural revival. The business developer at chess.com told the Washington Post recently that it's added nearly 13 million new players since March. Are you playing online? What do you think of playing a computer versus a person? Do you like to play with a chess clock? Conversation right here, 800-642-1234. Alex Bettinelli is an instructor and National Chess Master in Wisconsin. He's our guide to the game. Alex, what do you think of these chess clocks? It's so stressful watching a player with a chess clock going.
Well, it's definitely not necessary for most people. It was invented because the game of chess could easily last for more than 24 hours before the chess clock came along. So tournaments would drag on for weeks. So that's why the invention. And it does add a bit of adrenaline when you play with the clock.
Yeah, sure. I was watching you on a video, I think it was back from 2011, and just how fast the game just was cruising. I couldn't keep up. I don't know how you can keep up with that pace.
Well, you don't necessarily make the best moves when you play quickly. You know, you use your intuition and then you go back home and you look at the game and see what you did wrong and try to improve next time.
Oh, so you watch those games back maybe afterward and kind of just like in sports,
great question.
Yeah?
Yeah. Actually, when you're playing tournaments, you write every game down.
Okay.
Yes. Or if in live tournaments it is. Or if you play online, all the games are saved for you by the website and you can go back and examine the moves. So, yeah, absolutely. We can look at the games played 500 years ago.
Wow. Does that, seeing those games mapped out like that in a different way, is that a different approach for your brain in understanding how that game happened and went down?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And you can look at how the world champions played, you know, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, and compare the evolution of the game, how different ideas, you know, came to being in chess.
So I want to talk a little bit here about the end games, which can be incredibly difficult. Getting to checkmate is a puzzle that sometimes you just can't solve, and the game ends in like this draw, or you just end up chasing your opponent's king around the board forever, which has happened quite a bit at our house. What are your end game tips for us beginners?
Yeah, another great question. It is a skill of in its own right. You know, it's one thing to win the opponent's pieces, and it's completely different to get the king in checkmate. So you can go to a couple of websites. One is leadchess.org, the other one is chess.com, and there are specific exercises where you get to practice how to checkmate with, say, one queen and one king against the opponent's king. And the computer literally guides you, saying, okay, would you like a hint? Would you like to take a move back? And then, you know, so you do it several times and you get very good at it. And that's true for anybody. I mean, it's useful for a beginner. It's useful for somebody who is already an established player. And you can keep on increasing the difficulty level for those.
Yeah, I wonder what questions you ask in your head before you make your move. What are those types of questions you're asking yourself?
We always ask ourselves, what is the opponent's next move? What are they trying to do? Mm-hmm. Is there a threat? And conversely, what can I do to try to get the advantage?
Yeah, yeah. We're talking with Alex Bettinelli, who's a national chess master, founder of the Wisconsin Chess Academy. Are you new to chess or an old hand at the game? What do you love about it? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Paul now, joining us from Slinger. Hi, Paul.
Howdy. Yeah, I played the game back when I was a teenager and haven't played it since. But the game is, you can, a couple of points, you can buy it, you know, chess computers online that you can, and you can set it at a beginner's level to a expert, to master and grandmaster. Generally, if at those levels, the computer is obviously working at very fast speeds, and it runs through, its decision making is instantaneous, so you can't beat it. So playing with a human being is more, obviously more interesting, because you're using intuition and more game theory and trying to understand what the your opponent is trying to accomplish and eventually checkmating the monarch or the king. So it's a great game, because you can, end game play is really exciting. You can, quarter to 11 in the evening, you can take a particular end game and spend 20 minutes just analyzing the how you accomplish checkmating the opponent.
Yeah.
And that's very good. But a game that's even more challenging is the game of Go. It's an Asian game, which is played in just every university across the planet, which is far more challenging than chess even.
Alex, what do you think of that? What Paul is saying there, that there, the human intuition, it makes the game and you, more interesting, and then you can bring in more game theory versus the computer that can scale to your ability.
Yeah, I think Paul is spot on. I mean, it is more interesting to play against other humans, just because there is the, you know, the element of mistake. Computers at the very high level rarely make mistakes in, you know, the way humans would. So definitely playing against the computer is just like a super humbling experience.
Paul, thanks for the call. Let's bring in Charlotte now in Milwaukee. Hi, Charlotte. What would you like to add about chess? Hi.
I think he answered a little bit of my question. My question was, is it impossible to beat the computer? And what are the percentage of winners against a computer, if they even have that data?
Yeah, great question.
That's a great question. Yeah, as recently as 10 or 15 years ago, the very best humans could still compete with computers, and we used to have matches of a best of 10 or best of 12 between the top human beings and top computers. That's long gone. If the world champion were to play it, you know, without any odds against the computer right now, they wouldn't win too many games, and they may draw a few, but that's about it. But the nice thing about computers is that, of course, you can adjust the setting. So you can find that something that is just a little bit stronger than you. So it's interesting. You're definitely in the game, and you can enjoy the experience. But facing the very, very top computers is not possible for chess players any longer.
Oh, that, and it's because our computers are more sophisticated today. What is that reason?
They can see a lot of moves ahead very, very quickly. Uh-huh. And programming is very sophisticated. So there is you can actually program almost the way human being thinks in the computer. So not only do they have the power of calculations, but also they can cut down on the number of lines they calculate like a human being would. So it's they kind of have the best of two possible worlds. And they never ever get emotional and blunder because they're upset, you know?
Yeah. That human emotion that we have that makes these irrational moves, like computers don't have to worry about that, I suppose.
You're correct, yes.
Alex, I want to go back to Moscow for a moment where we started the conversation. What do you see in how the rest of the world plays this game versus how Americans play chess?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I mean, I tend to think of chess as a very universal international game that kind of encompasses people of, you know, from all cultures and all ages, all races and ethnicities. So, I'm not sure if it would disappoint you, but I would say that, you know, people play and enjoy it at the same level everywhere.
If you would be back in Moscow today, where is your favorite place, your favorite setting to play the game?
Ooh, great question. Probably the Moscow Young Pioneers Palace. That's where I went. I went to chess school back in the day. That brings some good memories.
What does it look like, the Young Pioneers Palace?
Well, I mean, it's a building that hosted many, many different clubs, chess club being the most popular and the most numerous one. Chess was so popular in the Soviet Union that, you know, me being a member of the chess club, I could easily, let's just say, not show up for a test at school and go represent my school at the chess competition, and it would be just perfectly fine for teachers and administration. So, I mean, I really enjoyed those days.
As we start to wrap up, I'm wondering, what skills do you try to put into your young chess players, or what values do you try to instill with them with the game? How do you make them cherish and love the game so that they will pass it on?
Yeah, great question. So we definitely teach our students to think ahead, but also be very good winners and losers. You know, everybody who plays the game of chess is going to win some and everybody will lose some games. So it's important to be, you know, kind and understanding and realize that the game is much bigger than any one of us as a player. There is a way for everybody to improve and enjoy the game.
Alex, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me, and I would like your listeners to do two things, if possible.
Okay.
Number one is, of course, you can play chess safely from home. And number two is, please listen to WPR. They offer some great programs.
Oh, thank you so much. That was lovely. Alex Bettinelli is a national chess master, founder of the Wisconsin Chess Academy. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the Wisconsin Weekend on The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.